The first sugya we did was Kmitzas Psulim. This is coming out of the Mishnah on Vav Amud Beis. Machlokas between Ben Beseira and the Chachamim, if you had the Kmitza done by a Tzar, Zrika done by an Onen, Tvul Yom, the various people who are possible to do a Voda, can you go back or not, right? So Ben Beseira said you cannot. You can, sorry, and the Chachamim said that you can. You cannot go back. Cannot go back for Chachamim, you can go back for Ben Beseira. When we talk about a Voda of Psulim, so the first thing you need to talk about is the Chakira of the Mikdash David. I don't think I've talked about this year, but I have a rant against people who talk about the famous X, Y, or Z. You know, the famous Brisker Rav. By definition, there's no such thing as a famous Brisker Rav, right? You can get a famous Pasuk, maybe a famous Rashi, and if something's a song. The closest thing there is to a famous...
songs out of the Brisker Rav.
What?
We should make songs out of
That should be a summer project. The closest thing we have, though, to a famous Mikdash David is the Mikdash David in the beginning of Tes Vav Aleph, where he asks the core Chakira for the Avoda of Psulim. Is the Avoda of someone who's Pasul a Avoda HaPoseles, or is it a lack of Avoda? Since he's a Tzar, he's not able to do Avoda. He's a Tzar. He's not Shayach to Avoda at all. Or is it that since he's a Tzar, that he did an Avoda Psula? That's the question of the Mikdash David. One nafkamina of this is something we've seen. This is the kind of question that like you learn kachem, and this, you know, you use this like tool. It comes up again and again. This idea is going to come up a couple times in our limud, even for this chunk of the Masechta. Ibur tzura. If you have something which is you have a psul, so you want to know what kind of psul is it. If it's really pasul, if it's an avodah haposeles, then it's going to go right away to the Beis HaSreifa. You just burn it right now. If you think that there's no active posel, there's just a lack of hechsher, you didn't do avoda for se, then it will require ibur tzura. So that's one of the nachmina to this question. And the second one, and that's where this comes into our sugya, is can you, in situations where it's just practically available to you, can you go back and fix it and do it right? Well, if we think that you did an avoda haposeles, so then you're gonna have problems. If you think that you just didn't do an avoda, so then nothing happened. I shot a blank, so I can just go back and do it again. That seems to be the exact machlokas, at least bepashtus, between Ben Beseira and the Chachamim. And the Ravid says this black on white. According to Ben Beseira, since the person who did it was pasul avoda, he didn't do anything. So okay, great. Someone scooped up the flour and he took it out of the klisharis. You could put this flower back in the klisharis. That doesn't mean anything. The Chacham say, no, the Chacham say, this was an avoda by apostle, is an avoda haposeles, and therefore, you're not going to be able to go back. That also seemed to be the view of the Bali Atosos Alatar, because the Bali Atosos said that, you know, the Mishnah seems to highlight smol more than the other psulim over there. That it was specifically when the Mishnah said that the kmitza besmol is a problem with your left hand, so all of a sudden, then and there, Ben Beseira jumped up and said that it's okay. So why does Ben Beseira have to single out smol as being okay? So Bali Tosas explained, I would think that smol is more of an avoda than zar onin tful yom. Why? Because we do have a place where smol is an avoda. It happens every single year on Yom Kippur. So we'll be more likely to think of smol as an avoda, therefore more likely to think of it as an avoda haposeles, and therefore Ben Beseira had to jump in and say, Dafka, right there, no, don't think that the avoda of psulim is never an avoda at all, and you're always able to go back. That's the Ravid, that's the Bali Tosos, that's your first jump into the sugya. Very clean, Ben Beseira and the Chachamim and the Chum are just arguing about whether the avoda psulim is a zero or is an avoda haposeles. The problem is that this doesn't really sustain the Gemara, because even though in the Mishnah we seem to focus on smol as being more of a problem than the other avodos, you turn to the Gemara, and in the Gemara it treats smol as a kula. That since it's kosher on Yom Kippur, more likely that it's going to be okay to do it again. what's going on over here? That sounds like the exact opposite. It is the exact opposite of what the Balei Tosfos said. So we're not the first ones to ask this question. This question was asked about 5 minutes after Tosfos asked it, because it's asked by the Shita Mekubetzes. Shita Mekubetzes says, yeah, there are svaras hameschalfos lekach lekach. You could look at Smol as being better, you could look at Smol as being worse. Why is that? So the Griz explains, it's a very important and a very clear point. And the Griz tells us, look, if we think, right, you take the tzad that the avoda of someone who's pasul is an avoda, right? It is an avoda. It's not a zero, it's an avoda. We can ask that in one of two ways. We could say, you know, it's obviously not a good avoda, it was done by a czar. Is the problem with it, though, that it posseled the carbon? It's an avoda haposeles. Or is the problem with it that it accomplished something? For example, it created shirayim, right? I had my flour, I had my mincha. It has accomplished something. I now have shirayim and a komet. So basically, it got me somewhere, but that's a problem because it got me into a dead end. In other words, it didn't necessarily posel the carbon, but it moved it into a direction where it doesn't have any future. Those are two possible ways you can say that if we think that the avoda of a posel has done something to the carbon, what has he done? Has he posseled it? Or has he accomplished something from which there's no longer any going back? And the Griz explains that smol is, these two perspectives are gonna depend on what you think about smol. If you think of the problem of the czar and everyone else as an avoda haposeles, you've ruined the carbon, so then I'm going to say, smol is not as bad as the other ones. Czar is a posel, onin is a posel. Smol, every year, on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol does avoda bismol. So I'll think that smol is more of a kula than the other avodos. If, however, I think of the problem as an avoda that is moeles, it's getting me into a dead end, so then I'm going to think which of these avodos is the most likely to register at all. And as Tosa said, smol is more likely to register as an avoda than anything else that's on there. So in that regard, I'm going to think of smol as a chumrah. So that's why we seem to have the Mishnah, the Gemara, looking at smol from both angles. In one sense, it's better than the other psulim. In one sense, it's worse because we have to be looking at this machlokas ben Beseir and the Chachamim on two levels. There's really a double machlokas here. Ben Beseir thinks that these psulim are zero, while the Chachamim are concerned both with the perspective of avoda haposeles and the perspective of avoda ha-moeles. Okay. The other big point in the sugya is when you get towards the end of the Gemara. The Gemara is trying to figure out what exactly Ben Beseira and the Chachamim argue about. And Lemaskan, at least there are two deos about it, but one view is that Ben Beseira thinks that you'll have a problem if you did Kemitza and Nesina Bekli. If you did both Kemitza and Nesina Bekli, then you cannot go back. But if all that the pasul did was Kemitza, you can go back. So Rav Nachman asks the very basic question in the Gemara. He says, "Bishmimanav shach," right? If you think that avoda is a problem, then you should be dead after Kemitza. If you think it's not a problem, you should be okay even after Nesina Bekli. Why are we drawing this distinction between the two? Gemara gives a very vague answer. It says, well, Lo gumra avodasa ad avid la matan kli. You didn't finish the avoda until you put in the kli. So that's great. You didn't finish it. Well, what on earth does that mean? You didn't finish the avoda until you put in the kli. The pashtus is that it sounds like we're saying there's really one long avoda called kemitza and nesina bekli. We were always brought up since we were 3 years old that there kemitza and nesina bekli are two avodos. Turns out that they're really actually one. We have this kind of phenomenon elsewhere in Kachim. The relationship between Kabbalah and Holacha, there are certain avodos where it's not so clear, you know, what the relationship is between them. That sounds like the Pashtus, but the Mefarshim point out that it's very difficult. For example, the Erechei Tanam Amorim, do you know if that's the same as the Yichusei Tanam Amorim, by the way, or if it's a different Sefer? Okay, Nafkamina, for me, it's very important because the Yichusei Tanam Amorim was the only Rishon I know of who did not have a sense of smell. So if it's the same person, then that's going to really resonate on the person. Yehuda ben Kolonimus, it's going to resonate. So he says, let's think for a second. The limud we had at the end of our limud, when we talked about pigul bechati matir, so nobody ever said that kmitza is half of a matir, because you have to do kmitza plus nesina bekli, and that whole sugi was obvious that we thought of kmitza as an independent avoda. The Sfas Emes is also bothered, and so they suggest, but it's difficult to understand what exactly the svar is going to be, that if you have the kmitza of a kasher, then that in and of itself will be considered an avoda. If you have the kmitza of a pasul, according to Ben Beseira, then it's going to require both kmitza and nesina bekli to be enough to register halakhically for you to have a problem. I don't know if we had such a compelling svara why that would be exactly, but that's where they have to go to explain just what the Gemara means in light of what's happening later on in the Masechta. Okay. The second sugi we did was Kiddush Kli Shareis, right? This comes up because the Gemara was trying to figure out, it asked then on Ben Beseira, well, if you did Kemitza but not Nesina B'Kli, so you put the Komates back into the Kli, then you're going to have a problem because then you just do a Kiddush. So that then launched the Gemara in a whole long discussion, Kiddush Kli Shelo Midas, and Kiddush if you're you have to hold the Kli Shareis when you do it. There's a whole discussion on Daf Zayin. So the basic question when it comes to Kiddush Kli is, do we think of this as just an automatic mechanism? You put the stuff in the Kli Shareis, and it's like a machine, and the Kli Shareis makes it Kadosh, it was red, you put it in, turns green, bing, and it's good to go. Or is it more than that? Is it more complex? You have to flesh out what exactly the complexity is, but is it just more than the Kli Shareis itself doing the work? The way, for example, one way to think of this is that the Kli Shareis has to be some shaychus to the object. There has to be some connection, right? Some real work. And that's exposed, for example, Ronnie Wolf points this out. The Gemara, our Gemara, I think on Daf Yud Aleph, said that not every Kli Shareis works for every single kind of stuff. The Gemara says, Kli Yavesh are Makadesh the Yavesh, and Kli Lach are Makadesh the Lach. So it's clear that you don't just have something from the Beis HaMikdash, put in something else, and now all of a sudden it becomes Kadosh. That question about how exactly Kiddush Kli Shareis is happening is very clearly highlighted by this question about Kiddush Midas or Kiddush Shelo Midas, which seems to be a running machlokas in a number of places in the Gemara. Do we say that you require the intent of the person who's putting the stuff in the Kli Shareis in order for Kiddusha to happen? The problem is that you get different views in different areas of the Gemara, as the Balei Tosfos ask on our Daf, on Daf Zayin, because our Gemara quoted Rabbi Yochanan as saying the Kli Shareis is not Mekadesh Midas. Remember, Rabbi Yochanan said, look, maybe it can be Mekadesh Lipasel, but for sure you cannot have a full Kiddush Kli Shareis without the intent of the person who's putting in. So if the Tzar is putting the Komates back into the Kli Shareis because he made a mistake, so that scenario would never be considered a full Kiddush Kli Shareis because you need Kiddush Midas. So Tosfos jump in and they say, that's very nice, that's very interesting. No Kiddush Kli Shareis unless you have Das. Very nice. Problem is, we go to later on in the Masechta, I think Daf Ayin Ches in Menachos, there's a machlokas there between Chizkiah and Rabbi Yochanan. When you bring a carbon toda, so it comes, that's next week's parsha, right? It comes with 40 chalos, 40 loaves, 10 of them are chametz, 30 of them are matzah, different kinds of menachos. And the halacha is that when you shecht the carbon toda, that is mekadesh the 40 loaves. The Gemara there has a question, what if instead of bringing 40 loaves, you brought 80? You brought double the amount of loaves you're supposed to bring. There's no question that we're only going to have maximum, we'll only have a kiddush on 40 out of the 80. What Rabbi Yochanan and Chizkiah argue about in the Gemara is, do you have a kiddush for 40? Or do you have a kiddush for zero? What you have there in the Gemara, at least in one explanation, I think Rava it is, right? Just 1 second. What does he say? So Rava says both for Chizkiyah and Rabbi Yochanan, you do have kiddush shlomidas. Right? You were kind of unaware of you made a mistake over here. But there's kiddush shlomidas. There's automatic kiddusha. Explains Rava. There's automatic kiddusha for 40 of the chalos. So Tos asks, well, hold on 1 second. What do you mean I have kiddush shlomidas according to Rabbi Yochanan? I thought Andav Zayin were saying you don't have kiddush shlomidas. So there are two answers in the Rishonim. One from the Tosas here, and then one from the Karanot and the Shiduk Betzos over there. Tosas here says that we have to flesh this out a little bit. There are two conditions to say that there is kiddush shlomidas. Number one says there has to be this idea of mitoch, that since 40 of the chalos were eligible, so therefore the kiddush is going to work, as opposed to arsugya where you had no intent whatsoever. So number two, it has to be the proper zman. It has to be the right time. He has to say that because the third gemara that they're dealing with is where they're getting the nisach hamayim for sukkis, and they're and everything seems to be working. Just they're doing it at the wrong time. Okay, the other view though, you haven't karenor shidugu betzas, and they think that there's a different way to be mechalik. Say, we actually say that there is kiddush shlomidas, even though our gemara here in Dav Zayin said it for Rabbi Yochanan. You need das to be mekadesh and a klisharis. That's actually not true. You do not need das to be mekadesh and a klisharis. After all, that's what Rava said in Daf Ayin Ches. What does our Gemara mean when our Gemara says that you don't have kiddush klisharis shlomidas? It means if you have active intent not to be mekadesh. When the Tzar is putting the komates back in the bowl, he specifically does not want to sanctify the komates. So the Shita Gebet says, Karanora say, you can't compare those two cases. If I'm opposing the Kedusha, then it's not going to be Chal. When I shecht the carbon toda, okay, automatically 40 out of the 80 might become Kadosh. But here where I have oppositional intent, right, Kavana Negdis, it's not going to be Chal. That's the other way to understand the stira over there. Okay. I didn't get to look this up, but Ari Brandon quoted in the Chavura on this, I think the Minchas Avram, who points out in the name of Rav Chaim, that one other way that shows that the way that Kiddush Klisharis works is more complicated than just an automatic machine, is that the nature of Kiddush Klisharis seems to work differently for different items. Rav Chaim says that the way that the mizbeach or the ramp of the mizbeach, mekadesh, whatever goes on them, is more active than regular klei sharis, which I didn't get to look up the details of that, but that again is another example of how it's more complicated than just automatic machinery. Okay, the third sugya we did was the sugya of Minchas Chavisin, Rabbi Rosenzweig's chabura. The Minchas Chavisin, very interesting carbon that the Kohen Gadol brings every single day. 12 loaves, half of them in the morning, half of them in the afternoon. And the main question in this whole sugya was, do we think of this as two different karbanos, Minchas Chavisin shel Shachar and Minchas Chavisin shel Bein Harbayim? Or do we think of it as one carbon which is being spread out over the whole day? The first point where he talked about this was analyzing the Tosfos on Daf Zayin Amid Beis. The Gemara there had something which was very funny. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Lazar have a machlokes whether dam can be miskadish lichatzayin. Can I, if I'm bringing a carbon, can I sanctify half of the blood that I need in one kli sharis and then get a second part of the blood in another kli sharis, and then I guess I'll use both of them. So Rabbi Lazar says That's not going to work. You can't be Mekadesh Dam Lechatzayin. Gemara says, hold on a second. Rabbi Lazar is telling me I cannot be Mekadesh Dam Lechatzayin. That's a stirik for Rabbi Lazar. Because in the sugya of Minchas Chavisin, Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yochanan have a machlokas. According to Rabbi Lazar, you can be Mekadesh those loaves half and half. So there's a blatant stira. And Dam is telling me that I cannot be Mekadesh Dam Lechatzayin. Minchas Chavisin, he's telling me that I can. And the Gemara has a whole long analysis of this. The problem is that based on what the Gemara itself said, you should have been able to make a very, very easy chiluk. Because when Rabbi Lazar says that you can be Mekadesh the Minchas Chavisin the Chatzayin, he says, look, where's the line? It's like literally, it just jumps off. He says, "Mitoch shakirva lechatzayin, kedusha lechatzayin." Since it's brought in halves, it can be sanctified in halves. And then the Gemara says, "Oh, there's a stira between minchas chavisin and what he said about dam." So Balai Tosa said, "What are you talking about? Just the chiluk is like staring in the face. That's the easiest. This would be the easiest stira to resolve in all of history." Right? Because it's a special din for Minchas Chavisin. Minchas Chavisin is brought separately. It's really two different karbanos. Why was the Gemara so bothered? It goes on and on, the whole Daf Chesam and Aleph fighting this question. It should have ended at the bottom of Daf Zayin Mabez, just say that Minchas Chavisin is two separate karbanos. So the Balai Tosa had, Rosa pointed out, had three different answers to this question. The last answer accepted the basic premise of the question. The last answer the Tosas had was Inachanami. Rabbi Lazar thinks that across the board you could be Mekadesh Lechatzayin, at least that it seems. And the way they read the Gemara is Rabbi Lazar says to Rabbi Yochanan, at least agree with me in Menchas Chavisin. Because Menchas Chavisin should be the easiest one to be Mekadesh Lechatzayin, because it's two separate things, right? In other words, Rabbi Lazar is saying, in general, I think Dam can be Mekadesh Lechatzayin. This is in the Hav Amina of the Gemara. The most obvious case where that should be is in Minchas Chavisin, because there it already is two different karbanos. So Rabbi Yochanan, how on earth can you argue with me in Minchas Chavisin? I can live with you arguing with me in other karbanos. You can't argue in Minchas Chavisin. That is already two separate karbanos. So of course it can be Mekadesh Lechatzayin. That was the third answer of the Tosos. The first couple of answers said no. Really, they brought the Minchas Chavisin more in line with the other ones. Okay. Now the key thrust, the part to really remember about this whole sugya, is that it seems to be this question of whether Minchas Chavisin is one carbon or two, just seems to be a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ravid. And this comes out of a couple of really astonishing views that the Rambam has. Again, when they taught us in first grade how Minchas Chavisin works, so what did the Kayadua, right? So they taught us.
More Debbie.
I think for me it was more honey. You take your isaron of flour.
Like,
you take your isaron of flour. There's a special klishares, which is only used for this one purpose, to split the flour into two half isaronos. You make half an isaron into six chalos, bring those in the morning. You take the other half, bring them in the afternoon. Everything is very clean, very specific, very split. Half in the morning, half in the afternoon. They say goodbye at the beginning of the process, and then they don't see each other ever again. That's how classically Minchas Chavisin is understood. You open up the Rambam, and it's the weirdest thing ever. You split the Isronos. Then you make them into 12 chalos. But instead of bringing six in the morning and six in the afternoon, The Rambam says you break each challah in half with a rough estimate. You know, it's like the pull apart challah. Like, this looks like it's about half and half. And you bring half of each challah in the morning and half of each challah in the afternoon. And the Rebbe goes,
About,
yeah, ba'omed, right, exactly. And the Rebbe goes, berserk. It's like, what on earth are you doing? You're separating them, you're bringing them together, you're separating again. This is not what Menachas Chavisin is. So what clearly seems to be emerging from the Rambam is that you're blending these two, right? It's a way of the way Erzlag put it, we're trying to have it as an avoda which is continuing over the course of the whole entire day. It's as if the Kohen Gadol is constantly engaged throughout the entire day in the bringing of his Minchas Chavisin. The way we bring that out is by taking this one carbon, splitting it, bringing it back together, bringing different parts, morning, afternoon, half, about half of each challah here, about half of each challah over there. It's really one carbon, and not only one carbon, but one extended hakrava. That seems to be the view of the Rambam. That's why the Rambam specifically puts the Menachas Chavisin in Hilchos Tmidin Musafin, because it's really, really linked with the carbon Tamid. And it's also, the last point on this sugya, bleeds into a very, very important general perspective about the Kohen Gadol, this idea that the Kohen Gadol is always engaged in avoda. You know, just by virtue of his standing as a Kohen Gadol, that's the whole idea. Min ha-mikdash lo yetzeh. He's always supposed to be on duty, as it were. So one area, I think Rav Brand raises, or Erzlag agreed, in the Chavura, that this comes out, is that there's a key machlokas between the Ravid and the Rambam. Any Kohanim in the room should know about this. When you wear your big day kahuna, so one of them, the avnate, is kilayim. So you're allowed to wear the avnate b'shas avoda. That's not a problem because it's the mitzvah. What? Oh, it's true. What? The question is, what about shalo b'shas avoda? The Ravid thinks that it's just a general hetter, right? It was hutter for avoda. It's just hutter across the board for everyone. The Rambam thinks, though, that if you're a kohen hedyot, you cannot wear the kilayim avnate if it's not shas avoda. That hetter is only available to the kohen gadol. What is the difference between the kohen gadol and kohen hedyot? If it's just a hutra, which the Ravid thinks, I understand hutra is a hutra. But why would it be hutra for the Kohen Gadol and not hutra for other Kohanim? It doesn't really make any sense. So the Rav says this, but it's already in the Radvaz. The Radvaz says, oh, because the Kohen Gadol, as it were, is always engaged in avoda. Like, even when he's not engaged in avoda, he is engaged in avoda. That's just what it means to be the Kohen Gadol. You're always engaged in being lifnei Hashem. That's brought out by this idea of the Minchas Chavisin, which he brings every single day, and we jigger the carbon to be as if the hakrava is stretched out over the course of the entire day. And the Ravid doesn't buy any of this. The Ravid says the Kohen Gadol, when he's doing avoda, he's doing avoda. When he's not doing avoda, he's not doing avoda. The Minchas Chavisin, two karbanos. You have the morning part. You have the afternoon part. Those are the two basic ways to understand the sugya. There's more to say about that. You know, Ayin Sham, his article, which I think, yes, he still has sitting on the shtender over there. Okay. The fourth sugi we did, I was hoping to tackle these in 5 minutes each, but that's not working out that way so far, was Avoda Behechal. As the Gemara was talking about Kiddush Kli, holding the Kohanim holding it, it bounced a few different questions. And then through there, we got to this statement of Rabbi Lazar that if you do kmitza behechal, that is acceptable. Normally, we think that avoda is done in the Azara. There seem to be two basic views in the Gemara about how we relate to avoda behechal. Rabbi Lazar does not seem to be such a fan. After all, he needs to justify it. He says, well, we have the siluk bazichin, the lechem apanim every Friday. Is it Friday or Shabbos? I should know that. Shabbos, right? Shabbos, yeah.
You bake it on Friday.
So we take lechem apanim.
On Friday? Isn't the switch on Friday? Switch on Shabbos.
I should really.
So that obviously happens in the Heichal, right? Because you're taking the Lechem Panim off of the Shulchan, which are in the Heichal. So Rabbi Lazar says, oh, just like you have, Siluk Bazichin can be done in the Heichal, so too, Kmitza can also be done in the Heichal. Sounds like he needs to justify doing the Avodah B'Heichal. It's not something that would be totally obvious to you. And this really was brought to light by the Griz, and the Griz says, oh, wait a second, Siluk Bazichin, if that's your precedent for doing Avodah B'Heichal, so Siluk Bazichin is linked to Kmitza. But I don't have a precedent for other avodos. So, okay, I can do the kmitza, but what about nesina b'kli? Lechem apanim, there is no nesina b'kli. You just take the bezir, you take those two kalim of lavona off of the shulchan, and you bring it over to the mizbeach. There is no avoda of nesina b'kli in the heichal. So the Griz says, maybe according to Rabbi Lazar, you couldn't do nesina b'kli. You could only do whatever I have precedent for. And that really highlights that Rabbi Lazar is very, very uncomfortable with Avod B'Heichal. You seem to get a totally different view a few lines later in the Gemara from Rabbi Yochanan. Because Rabbi Yochanan doesn't give you a makor, he doesn't give you a pasach, he doesn't give you a drasha, he gives you a svara. He says, lo yehe tafel chamor min ha'ikar. What is more holy, the Heichal or the Azara? Obviously, the Heichal is more holy. So if I can do avoda in the Azara, obviously I can do avoda in the Heichal. That's Rabbi Yochanan. Sounds much more okay with avoda beHeichal. And what seems to come out of here is, you know, we could formulate this question as: do we think of the Heichal as Azara plus? It's just a holier part of the Beis HaMikdash. And that's what seems to come out of Rabbi Yochanan. Or is it a fundamentally separate area of the Beis HaMikdash with fundamentally different roles and goals, etc.? Now, the Rishonim, even though Rabbi Yochanan seems to be pretty strong in the Azara plus side of the question, the Rishonim kind of reel him back in, bring him closer to the perspective of Rabbi Lazar. You have this in the Tosos and Daf Ches, who limit Rabbi Yochanan to only cases where the pasuk itself linked whatever you're doing to the Heichal. So, for example, Rabbi Yochanan himself had talked about shachting the shlamim. So the Balei Tosos say, well, it's the pasuk says, where do you shach the shlamim? El Pesach Ohel Moed. It's an avoda which is linked to the Ohel Moed. In those cases, he thinks that we're going to say lo yetafel chamor min ha'ikar. But otherwise, we're not going to say that. We're going to need the limud from the bezichin. You also see this this reeling the Rabbi Yochanan in from the Rambam, because the Rambam clearly thinks that avod beheichal is bidyevet. It's very clear from where he talks about it. Ma'aser Kabbanis Yud Beis Yud Beis, Parakei Halacha Dalet. He's not enthusiastic about Avoda Beheichal. So that's all pointing to them having two separate roles. Okay, if they have two separate roles, what exactly are those? So we had this very, very, really inspiring definition from Luchenstein Zatzal, who proposed, says, you know, we have what's normally thought of as the main machlokas in the whole reason for the Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan existing between the Rambam and the Ramban, where the Rambam thinks that it's all about avoda, and the Ramban, his introduction to the beginning of Truma, says, no, it's really about having a makum of Hashras Hashchina, about, you know, catching the lightning of Har Sinai in a bottle, and that one moment of Matan Torah, it's going to be permanently there. It's about Hashem having Hashem dwell among us. Two different perspectives about the Mikdash and the Mishkan. So Rilchanit says, the truth is, it seems like they're both right. Just it depends what part of the Mikdash we're talking about. The Azara is the Makom Avoda. The Rambam's view, that's really emphasized in the Azara. That's where the Mizbeach is, and that's where Avoda is supposed to happen. Whereas the Heichal is really designated and devoted to being the Makom of the Hashras Hashchina. He explains that's why you're able to expand the Azara, but you're not able to expand the Heichal. And he talks there also about the difference between Ketores and Karbanos. Ketores is all about Hashras Hashchina, Avodas Yom Kippurim, etc. While Karbanos are clearly all about Avoda. Okay, one last point on that sugya we should note is that even though the Rishonim really seem to be splitting the Heichal from the Azara, in one important regard, there's also a connection being made between them, which also comes up in our Gemara, and that is this question of psichas delasos haheichal. And the Gemara says, Macholos Rishonim, which Karbanos it applies to, but the idea that the doors of the Heichal must be open at least when you shecht your Karban Shlamim. I can't shecht my Karban Shlamim if the doors are closed. So the Sfas Emes right here in Daf Ches asks a very interesting question. He says, I understand if I'm in the Azara that I have to have the doors of the Heichal open because apparently there has to be some connection. You know, the carbon needs to be able to be misyaches to the pnim. A very interesting idea and very, very interesting about the carbon shlamim. We want to give a shiur of the carbon shlamim, so this should be the first sugi we talk about. But what if you're inside the Heichal? If I'm inside the Heichal, you know, it's kind of like Korach's question about the tzitzis, right? If I'm in the Heichal, do I need to open the doors? Like I'm already inside, or not? Sfas Emes asks the question. He's not sure. And what that, I don't know, is he, he's not sure. The tzad that you have to open it up would point to the idea of psichas lasas haheichal, not as just having the karban relate to the bifnim, but also that we would want these two makomos to be connected, right? That you have to have a bridge between the Heichal and the Azara, Bisha'as Avoda. One other area that this emerged from, another question in the Achronim, Rav Ilan Sinner, the Teras HaKodesh, so he asks, it comes up in the Gemara, the idea of Ubo Pritzim V'Chilalua. If the Goyish armies are breaking in, so wherever they break in loses kedusha. That's why the Rashi was talking about the Kohanim are eating their kachim inside the Heichal because their arrows and spears are going. It's a battle zone, battleground outside. So the Teras HaKodesh just asks, if the Goyim already breached the Azara, right? So they haven't broken into the building itself, but the Azara has been overrun. So you have Bo Pritzim V'Chilalua on the Makom Azara. Can you have the Kedusha of the Heichal remain intact if you've lost the Kedusha of the Azara? He's not sure. It's a very interesting question. And that really highlights this issue. To what extent, you know, we ask, do they have different roles? But then also, are these two places independent from each other? Or do we say, no, if you've lost your Azara, then already you can't have your Heichal either? Rav Ilan's not sure. That's one question that really crystallizes this issue.
It would be Musif or Simon's Har before Hanukkah. Do you remember this? That they were lighting the menorah in the Azara, not in the Heichal, and that the Kedushas HaHeichal decreased, and so everything, the whole Azara was like the Heichal. It was all Hasidish, not necessarily consistent with the Rav Ilan, per se. But now you can take a drink, well, I'll explain. But the whole point was that they were able to light the menorah, the Chash menorah could light the menorah in the Azara, because it had Kedusha HaHeichal and seemingly sort of bypassed this whole issue.
So assuming that you did not have Chilalua in the Heichal? What's...
Yeah, I think it was... No, it doesn't matter. You remember that it's connected. I have it in my notes.
Okay. I have to go back to that. Because I assume the guy broke into the Heichal also, right?
It gave it the same level as the Kedushas
HaZara.
What? And so it lowered the
Kedushas HaZara. Oh, that's right, yeah. That rings a bell. Okay. Okay.
Or sometimes you would say,
So that brought us to Daf Tes. In Daf Tes, we had three consecutive sugyas where Rabbi Yochanan was arguing with Reish Lakish. The first one was Belila Bachutz. Before you do the kmitza to the mincha, so you have to mix the flour and the oil, and it's belila. So if you do avoda outside of the azara, so that passes a karban. What about belila outside of the azara? So there, the Amoraim disagreed. Reish Lakish thought it was okay. Rabbi Yochanan thought that it wasn't, and each one had a good svar. Reish Lakish said, belila abachutz is totally fine, because a zar can do belila. So if a zar can do belila, so of course, a zar, of course you can do belila b'chutz. Rabbi Yochanan disagreed. Rabbi Yochanan said, well, belila needs a klisharis, so if belila needs a klisharis, then certainly it should need to be done inside the Beis HaMikdash. We had two basic ways of understanding this machlokas. One way to think about it is that Riochan and Rish Lakish are arguing about the nature of a klisharis. How effective is a klisharis outside the Beis HaMikdash? Rabbi Kraft quoted machlokas between Rashi and Rabbeinu Gershom. Rashi is of the opinion that even though a klisharis cannot be mekadesh outside the Beis HaMikdash, it can be mekadesh lipasel. So it does have some activity. The battery is not all dead outside the Beis HaMikdash. It can be mekadesh lipasel. So possibility is, right, once the klisharis can have some effectiveness outside the Beis HaMikdash, so maybe that's the Shorash Machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish thinks that a klisharis does have some chalos outside the Beis HaMikdash, so therefore he'll think that the Belila, just because Belila needs a klisharis, it still can be done outside. Hey, you don't need a Kohen, and a klisharis is worth something outside the Mikdash, that's okay. And Rabbi Yochanan will disagree. Rabbi Yochanan says, outside the Beis HaMikdash, a klisharis is a zero, so if I need a klisharis, must be that I need Beis HaMikdash. That was one way to understand the machlokas. Problem with it, at least for one Rishon, is that the Rambam thinks that Belila does not need a klisharis at all, which is a problem because it seems to contradict the Gemara. We'll talk about it in a second. But clearly, if you think that Belila does not have to be done in a klisharis, then Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish cannot be arguing about the nature of klisharis b'chutz. And in fact, in Rav Moshe Soloveitchik's one of his pieces on this sugya, he says, quote, Pashat l'kuli alma de klisharis leka elabifnim. Right, so Rav Moshe doesn't even entertain this as a possibility. He just says it's obvious that a klisharis only works on the inside. So if they're not going to argue about the nature of klisharis b'chutz, so then the other way to explain the Gemara is that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are arguing about the nature of belila. We saw two basic ways to understand this, that they're arguing about belila. One was from Rav Ilan, who just put it in very black and white terms, so it was a little bit difficult. Rav Ilan suggested that they're arguing whether belila is just thought of an avoda and a sheiros or not. Reish Lakish says, hey, it doesn't need a kohen, so it's not an avoda, it's not a sheiros. And we can, go back to Ari's Chabur about Shechita Lav Avodahi. And Rabbi Yochanan says, no, it needs a klisharis. So sharis and sheiros go together, right? So if it needs a klisharis, then it is an avod, it is a sheiros. We thought that was a little bit of a stretch, because the Gemara at the end of Menachos, the Mishnah in the Menachos, have a whole discussion about what is considered a sheiros, what is not considered a sheiros. So we didn't really understand his use of that term per se, but that is how Rav Ilan puts it. Right? They're just arguing, do we think of Belila as really an avoda or not? Rav Moshe Soloveitchik put it in more nuanced terms. He says, look, Belila is not an avoda. Okay, the avoda, what's the first avoda of a mencha? The first avoda of a mencha is kmitza. Belila is not an avoda. What is it? Well, it's one of the stages in preparing a mincha. So he says, Rabbi Yochanan has this intermediate category, what he calls midine ma'ase ha-mincha, the halachos of preparing a mincha. And particularly, and this is a recurring theme this whole year, the importance of the chafetza shel mincha. So something which is midine ma'ase ha-mincha, preparing the mincha, that is enough of a status that it must be done bifnim. It's like, it's not an avoda, but it's like you can call it a junior avoda. It's an important part of the process. And Reish Lakish says, I don't buy it. We start with kmitza. Before kmitza, it's just spring training. It doesn't count for the final record. So that was the other way to understand the machlokas. The other major piece in this sugya comes out of this very, very interesting. What's Rav Stav's line about the short tosos?
Tizaher
mitosof katan. Right. So we have a short tosos here, but they drop a bomb. Because Tosa says, hold on a second. according to Yochanan, Blila b'chutz is pasul. Last I checked, if you don't do Blila at all, it's okay. The halacha of Kol Sheroy Lebila Ain Bila Ma'keves Bo. As long as you could have done Blila, you don't have too much flour. As long as you could have mixed it all together, you don't need to. So how could Blila not be required, but doing it b'chutz is pasul? That's Tosas' question right over here. The answer that they give is that, you're right, if you don't do Belila at all, it's okay. But Belila b'chutz is worse. What's the idea here? The idea here is that even though Belila is not one of the avodas of a karban, it has the ability to create a psul in the karban. Which is kind of surprising, a little bit counterintuitive. Like usually you would think avodos can pasul and non-avodos cannot pasul. We're going to have this come up in pigul, right? You can only do pigul with an avoda. But the suggestion here from the Balei Tosos is that Belila is in this intermediate category. Rav Ilan will be happy about this, and he's going to say that Belila b'chutz can pasul a carbon. It's worse than nothing. This comes up a little later on in the Masechta. The Tosfos have the same suggestion for Rabbi Shimon. Later on Daf Yud Ches, Rabbi Shimon thinks that Blila actually does have to be done with a Kohen. So Tosfos there asks the same question. How come Blila has to be done with a Kohen if you don't need to do Blila at all? And one of their answers there is the same idea. The Blila Bizar is a posel. It's worse than doing nothing. But it's a big Chiddush. The Gram of Moshe wants to make another suggestion. Very, very creative. He says, well, let's think for a second. Right? It's very difficult to say that Belila can pasul a carbon. It's not an avoda. But we do know is that the carbon has to be eligible to do Belila. So let's rewind the tape. What actually happened here? You took your flour and your oil. You walked outside the Beis HaMikdash. When you're outside the Beis HaMikdash, you mix it all together. You created a beautiful mixture of flour and oil. Now you come back inside the Beis HaMikdash. What are you going to do with this? It says, this concoction in your klisharis, we will call, the halachic man sees this. And what does he see? He doesn't see flour and oil mixed together. He sees eno roi levila. He sees something which can no longer be mixed. He sees an item that cannot have blila done to it. Just like if you have a ton of flour, it's impossible to create to do Belila because you can't do Belila of a little bit of oil with a ton of flour. Well, you know what you also can't do Belila on? Something that's already been mixed together. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik suggests that the problem with Belila b'chutz is that it's impossible to do Belila on this anymore. So in terms of thinking about Belila, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik is agreeing with Tosfos that there is such a thing as a kiyum of Belila, right? He just thinks that you can't pasul a carbon through Belila. The Brisker Rav, also known as Rav Moshe's brother, does not like this suggestion. The brother's going at it because he says, what is behind this whole din of kol sharei lebila ain bila ma'keves bo? That as long as you could have done Belila, you don't need to do Belila. What does that mean? So Rav Moshe understands that it means that there's like a virtual kiyum, right? As long as you could have done it, you don't need to do it. But the Grizz says, look, we have one Rishon who gives a real definition of what that whole concept means. It's the Rashbam, another famous, I guess, brother. And the Rashbam says that all that it means, kol rei lebila ain bila ma'keves bo, is just telling you what the shear of a mincha is. It's not like, oh, you virtually did Belila. It just means you have to have the proportion of oil and flour has to be such that they could be mixed together. It's just a din in shiurim. How much flour and how much oil do I have? So the Grizz says, look, if it's a din in shiurim, then we're not going to say that there's any idea of virtual Belila, and when you do it outside the mikdash, you can't bring it in, it's ein roi lebila now. What do you mean? I have the right proportions of flour and oil. So okay, so this machlokas between Rav Moshe and the Grizz, comes down to this basic question about what kol rei lebila is. If kol rei lebila is just shiurim, then you can't say the you can't say Rav Moshe Soloveitchik's suggestion. But if you think that Kalarei Labila means that as long as you could have done Belila, you don't actually need to, so that exactly describes this case, right? Since I could have done Belila, I don't need to, but now that I did it outside the Mikdash, I'm not able to do it anymore because it's already mixed together, and therefore you're going to have a problem. So that was the sugya of Belila Bachatz. The next major fight that Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan had was about the sugya of Mincha Shechasra Kodem Kemitza, where if you lost some of your flour before you did the Kemitza. Reish Lakish said it's dead, and Rabbi Yochanan said, what do you mean it's dead? I didn't do Kemitza yet. Go home and get more. So just a couple of main haras on this topic. Number one, this is a sugya that's very, very important for understanding how menachos become kadosh. Remember the very beginning of the year, I think the first chabur we were in the tent, Rabbi Kraft quoted the Ravid, said, menachos are different from zvachim, because zvachim, you are makadish bepeh, but menachos, you can't give a kedusha saguf bepeh, you have to give a kedusha saguf bekli. Why is that? What's the difference? So the Ravid suggested it's because you're missing a maisa rabba in menachos. In zvachim, you just shecht the animal is ready to go. You know, just needs to be shechted, and you're off and running. So therefore, you can just declare it as a carbon now, and you're good to go. But for menachos, we just talked about a minute ago, right? You have to the flour and the oil and the blila and the yetzika, the whole process of creating it. So the Ravid said, if something needs all that activity, that's not something you can just create kedushas peh with. It already needs a klisharis. But another way, a couple of the Achronim don't like this idea. I think the Mikdash Daven and a couple of others, and they another perspective here is that the reason why you need a klisharis is because the klisharis creates the chafta shel mincha. An animal, a zevach, I don't need to create a chafta shel zevach, right? It's a cow. It's a sheep, but what creates a carbon mincha? Mincha is just, it's a collection of loose flour and oil. There's nothing inherently making this into an item that we would call a carbon mincha. So that might be why you need a klisharis. That perspective fits very well with Reish Lakish, because Reish Lakish says that once you put it in the klisharis, that makes it into a mincha. And once that's the case, there's no going back. Now, what does Rabbi Yochanan think in this regard? Rabbi Yochanan thinks that you're allowed to go back until the moment of Kemitza. So one way to think about it is that it's like a rolling admissions period. It becomes a mincha at Shas Nesina Bekli, but then, you know, you can keep on adding and subtracting from it until the moment of Kemitza. But Rashi does not learn that way. Rashi learns that Rabbi Yochanan fundamentally rejects this whole perspective, and for Rabbi Yochanan, who we paskin like, you're going to have to go like in the direction of the Ravid, because Rashi says that as long as you didn't do Kemitza, it's not called Mincha. Lo Mikri Mincha. So then according to Rashi, you have a very, very fundamental machlokes here between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says it becomes a Mincha when you put it in a Kli, and for Rabbi Yochanan, it becomes a Mincha when you do Kemitza. Okay. That perspective, especially the perspective of Rashi, draws out a huge problem. According to Rashi, what are we saying right now? According to Reish Lakish, it's a mincha when I put in the klisharis. According to Rabbi Yochanan, it's not a mincha at all until Kemitza. Well, hold on a second. What was the sugya we did 2 minutes ago about Blila? Blila is before Kemitza, and yet Rabbi Yochanan was the one who was saying that Belila Bachutz is a problem. So how on earth is Belila Bachutz going to kill my mincha if it's not a mincha yet? I didn't do the Kemitza. The sugya seem to be totally contradictory, and they're right next to each other. It's not even like, you know, Bali Tosis quoting from like Erechin or something. It's like, Daf Yomi, they're going to ask this question. So Baruch Hashem weren't the first Jews to be bothered by this. Chok Nasan in the back of the Gemara already asked it. And the Chok Nasan just made a very, very important point for us to be to be aware of. That, yes, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it doesn't have a shame mincha until kmitza. But it's not a zero, right? It has kedusha before that point. So since it has kedusha, potentially there are psulim that could apply to it. What we're going to have to do is we're going to have to take every single psul and we're going to ask, does this psul require a cheftza shel mincha, or does this psul just require kedusha? So when we talk about chaser, that there's missing flour, missing flour is only going to be a problem once I have my cheftza shel mincha, right? How can my cheftza shel mincha be missing some of its flour? Then you're going to have a problem. Before that, put more flour in, take more flour out. The fact that these particles of flour have kedusha does not tell me that it's a problem if some of them are missing or not, right? It's going to be totally, totally fine. But blila b'chutz, doing blila outside the Beis HaMikdash, remember, right, Rav Moshe, the dinei ha-mincha, you can't do things to something that has kedusha outside the Beis HaMikdash. It all has to happen inside. So you're right. It doesn't have a shame, and not a cheftza shel mincha yet. It's not as perfect, you know, shining, vibrating orb that we call, you know, the holy mincha. But it's got kedusha. The process has already begun, and once the process has begun, then b'lila b'chutz can already be a problem. And Reish Lakish, you know, we'll say to Rabbi Yochanan, we disagree on two fronts. I think that already at the early stage where it's in a Kli Shareis, it has a shame mincha. I don't need to wait till kmitza. It has a shame mincha now. But I'm not bothered by b'lila b'chutz, because b'lila b'chutz, it's fine, right? You don't need a kohen for b'lila. So in theory, for Reish Lakish, the cheftza is more vulnerable at the moment of b'lila. Just he thinks that what you're doing to it is not as problematic. So the two sugyas actually do not contradict, because we're thinking about two different issues. That was the point of the chognasa. Okay, more to talk about, but let's move along. The next sugya, big sugya, so I'll try to do it as quickly as I can, was the topic of the question of mincha shechasa ben kmitza lehaktara, right, where you lost some of your mincha after kmitza, but before you burned it. The first machlokas was you lost some of your flour before kmitza. Rabbi Yochanan said it's okay, get more. Reish Lakish said it's not okay, it's the game's over. And the next question they argued about was if after kmitza happened, you lost some of the flour. Once again, the same machlokas. Rabbi Yochanan says it's okay, you go weiter and do the rest of the avoda, burn the komitz. Reish Lakish disagreed. He said, you cannot. Why on earth can't I continue? I did a kmitza already. Why should I not be able to burn the komitz? Because back home on the range, we lost some of the shirayim. They're just shirayim. They're just leftovers. Why should I be bothered? So the Gemara explains, and to understand this, you need to take, you know, one step back, that there's this machlokas in Pesachim between Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Yeshua, right, the two Rebbeim of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Eliezer says, if you have a karban and you lost the basar, that's okay. Last I checked, avoda is all about the dam. So, ein basar, yesh dam. Hey, go, it's a pasuk. Dams v'chacha yishafech. No matter what, you always spill the blood. As long as you have blood, bring the blood. And we say that seems like it's just a gilei milsa. It's not a particular chiddush. So he has one pasuk. He can apply it to olos and shlamim and menachos. He applies it to everything because it's basically just a svar. Rabbi Yeshua disagrees. And Rabbi Yeshua says, no, ein basar, ein dam. If I don't have either basar for the kohanim to eat or a murin to burn on the mizbeach, I cannot go ahead and continue bringing the dam. Ein basar, ein dam. We asked, what is the nature of this din, ein basar, ein dam? And there were two basic options. One came out of Rashi. Rashi said, this is an important idea for us to know about what it means for Zrika. He says Zrika is not just, the problem is he said it more extremely than that. Rashi said Zrika is all about making things mutter. Interesting way to think about avoda. Sprinkling the blood is about making things mutter. So if you don't have anything to make mutter, then what's the point of bringing the carbon? So it's a problem in the Zrika. A Zrika that is not materes, because the stuff that will be mater is gone, then that's an ineffective Zrika. It's a problem in the carbon. That's the view of Rashi. We saw the Yachronim were bothered by this, because how can Rashi say that the only point of Zrika is to matir basar? I thought Zrika was there to give you kapara. But okay, that's what Rashi said. Ein basar ein dam, it's a problem in the avoda of Zrika. The other perspective, though, and the Menchas Avraham had a number of proofs for it, is that ein basar ein dam is really a din in the carbon. That the idea is that, you know, the dam represents the whole carbon, so there has to be, like, a carbon for the dam to represent. There has to be something for it to be being brought on behalf of. It's a problem in the carbon, that the dam can't exist on its own. It has to be connected to something. And the Menchas Avraham had a number of proofs for this. This was why, just to take like the easiest one, this is why Rabbi Yeshua needed different makoros for chata, for minchas nesachim, for chelev, for the kaved and the klayos, because Rabbi Yeshua keeps on asking himself the question, is this enough? Right? Is this enough for the dam to be misyachis to? So okay, I don't have the basar. I have the kavod, I have the chelev. I don't have any of the carbon. I have the minchas nesachim. It's like a sidecar, right, that's brought along with the rest of the carbon. Is that going to be enough? Rabbi Yeshua keeps on asking this question, and it seems to point to this perspective of ein basar ein dam, that it's about the relationship between the dam and the basar. So now...
When you say that, you mean it's a din in the carbon?
Yeah. That's yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly.
So not relationship meaning that the former hinges on the latter, right, in terms of the purpose of the, right, that's what you're contrasting.
Yes, yes, yes. So now once we say that it's a din in the carbon, right, that I need basar there for the dam to represent. So now we can ask, how does that carry over to menachos? Are menachos going to be the same, or are menachos going to be different? We have three basic options. One option is to say that that menachos are that the komates is more closely related to the shirayim. So any lack of shirayim is going to be a problem for the komates. It's a stronger connection. Basar ein dam, there's some connection. But benachos, there's going to be a stronger connection. And that's the view of Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish, who thinks that ein basar ein dam is even more machmir for menachos, because it's not, in Zvachim, it's okay if I have a kezias of basar. But in menachos for Reish Lakish, as long as any of it is gone, I have a problem. And we saw some evidence, the Nitziv and the like, emphasizing the role of achila, right? That the shirayim of the mincha seem to have a greater stature. They're emphasized more in the psukim in Vayikra, not just in Tzav. The Nitziv pointed out the Menchas Chinuch thought that the kohen who does the kemitza has to eat some of the shirayim. This all fits well in Reish Lakish's view. But the Rambam, Rabbi Yochanan obviously disagreed, because Rabbi Yochanan did not think we have a super duper chumrah for menachos in the world of Ein Basar Ein Dam. He said it was, you know, at minimum, sounds like it's the same as Vachim, that as long as you have any of the mincha, a kezias of the mincha, you're going to be okay. The question then is, what does Rabbi Yochanan think? Does Rabbi Yochanan think that ein basar ein dam is the same in menachos as it is in Tzvachim? Or maybe he radically disagrees, and he thinks that there's even less of a connection between the komates and the shirayim than there is between the basar and the dam, and therefore there's going to be even less of a din of a requirement for Ein Bas or Ein Dam. And that is the view of the Rambam, because the Rambam thinks that even if you're missing all of the Shirayim, b'di'eved, you can still bring the Komates. And he thinks that as long as you have any of the Shirayim, even less than a Kezias, you can burn the Komates lechatchila. So both of those Pesachim of the Rambam are really demoting Ein Basar, Ein Dam for Menachos. As long as I have any of the Mincha, green light, go ahead. And even if I have none of it, b'di'eved, I can still bring the Komates Masha Ein Kein when it comes to a Zebach. And we saw some other pieces pointing towards this downgrading of the Shirayim. We had Rav Bornstein's article where he said that there's no Shem Mincha on the Shirayim. We had the Taras Kohanim who said that you can burn the Komates even though you don't have any Shirayim at all. And where this comes from, by the way, the Lecha Mishnah pointed out that this, if you read it very carefully, this seems to be the view of Rabbi Yossi already in the Gemara itself, making this chilek between Menachos and Zvachim. Zvachim, we say, Ein Basar, Ein Dam. The Dam needs to represent a piece of the carbon itself. But when it comes to Menachos, we're going to say, no, the Komates is a standalone, the Shirayim are the leftovers, right? The Netziv pointed out in Hemek, one line in Hemek Davar after the Netziv says that all Shirayim are treated very, very prestigiously because they're in Parshas Vayikra. So one pasuk later, the Netziv says, well, they're called the Nosros, right? And he says that Nosar sounds like a downgrading. It's the leftovers. So that, you know, other pieces, but that's the basic issue in that sugya. Okay. Try to take the last few more quickly. We then moved, right, all that until now, the first hour, that was all that first major piece coming out of the Machlokas and the Mishnah, Ben Beseira and the Chachamim. About, remember, going back to the beginning, can you go back and undo an Avoda Psula? Now the Gemara finally moves on, and it tackles the various Psulim listed in the Mishnah. So, as you mentioned, we had a psul of smol. Yeah, that you can't do a voda with your left hand. Beisim achlokas tanaim about the scope of this psul. According to the Chachamim, spent a while in the Gemara figuring out where this comes from, but eventually we got there, that whenever the Torah says you need etzba, or it says you need kohen, as long as it says you need kohen means you need your right hand. Anything that needs a kohen must be done b'yamin. That is the view of the Chachamim. Sounds like, what are they really saying? Whenever you do an avoda, definitional tavoda, that has to be on the right hand, right? That's yamin, kohen. Kohen, that means avoda. Go back to shechita again. I automatically associate that with right hand. Rabbi Shimon disagrees. He says, no, kohen does not mean right hand. You know what kohen means? It means kohen. So he needs to wear big day kehuna. That's all it means when it says kohen. Kohen means he needs to wear big day kehuna. The Gemara says, "Bizman she big day malayim kunas hamalayim." Right? You're not a kohen unless you're wearing your big day kehuna to some degree at least. But that has nothing to do with yamin. So that's the basic machlokas Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim. Now, we'll come back to explain that in 2 minutes. When it comes to the psul of smol. So what's the classic hakira about the psul of smol? The same classic hakira we ask in all of our psulim in kachim. Is the problem a lack of right-handedness, right? A heder yamin, as we would say. Or is the problem that there is a active posel of smol? The Mikdash David, the famous Mikdash David hakira. We just plug it in again. Anytime we have a psul in kachim, we're always going to ask this question. Am I missing what I need? Or do I have something that's a problem? What difference does it make if it's a psul of smol or just a lack of yamin? So a couple of pieces that come out, we have the Balei Tosos who are talking about Malika. So, you know, as if Malika wasn't nasty enough, right? Thumbnail and you break your, you know, you dig the thing into the back of the neck of the bird. So Tosos asks, let's upgrade it a level, right? What if you do Malika Yeah, my thumbnail broke, so I'm going to use instead. Remember?
Shane.
Shane, right? Can I use my tooth to the long tooth to get that into the bird? So
that would preclude masks. I don't know if it's.
Yeah, it's not COVID friendly. The whole base of Mikdash wasn't really. It was outdoors. So Shane, you know, good news and bad news. A lot of bad news, but the good news about Shane is that it's not small, but it's also not Yemen. So the Balaitosis had two views on this, whether there's a problem of small when you use your Shane, which is not the weak hand, but it's also not the strong hand. So that's like, that's like enough community to this question. Okay, related to the nature of the psul of small, and this is a topic everyone likes to really get into, is, hey, lefty, Trace, are you a lefty? Okay, there we go. This is for you. So, what is the problem with a lefty? If Tracy was a Kohen and a man, she still would not be able to do avoda because a lefty cannot do the avoda. This comes out of the Mishnayos in Bechoros. The problem is, or the question is, what is his problem? What's the lefty's problem? So Rashi and the Ramban say a lefty has no right hand. Doesn't have a yamin. The Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says that it's a mum. Which, if you go through the Sigin Bechoros carefully, you see where both of those views come from in the Gemara and the Mishnah itself. This became a huge problem, halacha lemaisa, because if a lefty doesn't have a right hand, then a lefty also doesn't have a right foot.
Right.
And so, right, remember the Ramban spent a while, and this gets the Chachmei Sfarad really, really bothered. If I have a yavam, so, and he's a lefty, so maybe he can't do chalitza because al pi din he doesn't have a right foot. A couple of nafkamina to this are going to be, you know, avoda bibama, which doesn't need a yamin, but you can't be a balmum and do avoda on a bama. So if you think like Rashi that he just doesn't have a right hand, so on a bama it's the Kohen's day, you can have a good time if he's a balmum. But Gorntosa is balmum. Lefty, you're out. Exactly. Fine. The point that Rabbi Kraft really focused on in the Chabura was how Rabbi Lichtenstein really delved into this whole sugya. Now, the way to think about it is that, right, the Ramban told us, Rashi told us, that the lefty does not have a right hand. No one in the history of Torah ever said that a lefty doesn't put on tefillin. Why not? So, you explain, we need to think about the need for yamin in halacha from two different perspectives. We could talk about what he called yamin from the perspective of the maisa, meaning I need to use the strong hand. Sometimes the Torah says you have to use the yamin because you need the strong hand, and tefillin is like the example, perfect example of that. And the other one, so yad hachazakah for Pesach thinking, right? Yad hachazakah, that's the maisa perspective. He also talked about yamin mitzad hachefta. You need the chefta shal yamin, or as he put it, the yad, the li hasha'on, right? Which hand is the hand that doesn't get the watch? It's not as you need the right hand. It's not doing anything, right? The perfect example of that is chalitza, where what do we tell the chalitz to do? We tell him, sir, you know, stick your foot out so that the woman can do chalitza to you. He's not doing anything. So it's obvious in that case, we don't need his right hand or his right foot mitzad the maisa. We just need the chefta shal yamin, the more significant limb for doing the maisa. So he says, which hand for a lefty? Which hand is which one is considered yamin? So when it comes to the maisa, there's no question. With the stronger hand, the left hand will be the yamin of a lefty from a maisa perspective. It's a stronger hand. The problem is when it comes to the chefta shal yamin, we're not sure. It could be the stronger hand, or it could be the geographic left hand. We aren't sure. So he says this really comes to light is this view of the Ramah. The Ramah has a psak, which seems like a total contradiction. Says if I have chalitza, so the woman is a lefty, so we tell her do the chalitza with your left hand. But if the guy is a lefty, so we say you have to do chalitza on both of his feet. So I understand it. Why do we have this inconsistency between the woman and the man for chalitza? So he says it's very simple. From the woman's perspective, we care about the maisa for Yamin. Right? She's untying his shoe. That needs to be done with the stronger hand. For her, that's going to be the lefty. From his perspective, we care about the chefta shel Yamin. She's doing something. He's just sticking out his leg to get chalitza. And there, we're not sure if we care about the strong leg or the leg without the watch. And therefore, the Ramah says we're going to do chalitza on both. And then Rav Lichtenstein proposed that this could be exactly the machlokas between the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon regarding the scope of the requirement for Avoda B'Yamin. According to the Chachamim, Avoda needs, right, it's an action, I'm doing something, it needs to be done with the right hand. All Avoda needs a Maisa Shel Yamin. According to Rabbi Shimon, Avoda doesn't need Yamin Mitzad, the Maisa Shel Yamin. I only care about the Cheftza Shel Yamin. Whenever you have Avodos which require a hand, so the hand that's required has to be the Cheftza Shel Yamin. And that's why he's only going to require, have a psul of smol in areas where the Torah explicitly mentions the hand or the finger of the Kohen is being needed. Because when the Torah says he does this with his etzpa, that means I need the cheftza shel etzpa of the Kohen. Otherwise, I'm not bothered at all. Okay. A couple more sigyas. We had Rabbi Kachlita gave his chabura on achilas kadshim. A couple of very interesting points that came out of there. So we normally think of Pesach is coming up. So how much matzah are you going to need for motzi matzah?
I was
buying
4
cases
for fun.
Okay, and this big, right? So the Gemara in Psachim says about the Lachem Apanim that you have Kohanim who just say, give me a lentil bean, which I believe a lentil bean is smaller than an olive. And you have this Gemara in another Masechta in Seder Moed, which says that when Shimon HaTzadik was around, so the Kohanim would eat less than a kezias of lechem panim, and they'd like miraculously be full. So the problem is, you need to eat a kezias, I thought, to fulfill achilas kadshim. So some of the achronim answer this question by saying, yeah. You ate less than a kezias, and then you added it to some other kadshim to eat less than a kezias. Anyway, this, but it's a little bit dachuk because the whole point is that they're full. So why are they like eating more? I don't know. But Yossi pointed out that in this view that they're explaining the Gemara is that you're being mitzaref different achilos, so there still actually is a very important difference. The Mikdash David says you would eat some lachem apanim and then eat other minachos, while the Meshech Chachma says you would eat lachem apanim and then you would eat other kudjim. So he pointed out this seems to depend on the machlokas between the Bahag and the Rambam. How many mitzvos of achilas kadshim do I count? The Bahag just counts one mitzvah, eating kadshim. According to that, I can add menachos and zvachim and get a kezias. The Rambam, for whatever reason, has two mitzvos, eating zvachim and eating menachos, which definitely seems to be important for the relationship between zvachim and menachos. But so you point out, that's probably why the Mikdash David specifically has the Kohen eating more mincha, because you can't be mitzaref your zevach to your mincha. These are two separate mitzvahs. Be that as it may, the Beis Halevi, in a very important piece, rejects this whole view. He says, no, read the Gemara Kipshuto. They're eating less than a kezias. Why is that okay? Because when it comes to eating kadshim, the mitzvah is not incumbent upon the gavra. Say tonight, we are going to eat, right? There's a mitzvah on the gavra, we must eat a kezias of matzah. When it comes to kadshim, the mitzvah is mitzad ha-cheftza. Whatever kadshim is here must be eaten. I don't care if the Kohen eats more than a kezias, if he eats less than a kezias. If he is helping the kadshim accomplish its goal of being eaten, he is fulfilling the mitzvah. And he proved that from, was it a Mishnah or a Gemara about the Bavliim? Remember? Mishnah. Right? The Mishnah says, very interesting case, you know, this year we have a funky Shabbos Yantif situation with Pesach on Sunday. So the Mishnah says, what happened if you had Yom Kippur on Erev Shabbos. So the problem is, normally, Matzi Yom Kippur, the Kohanim would eat a lot of basar from the Chataos Hayom, but they can't cook it because they couldn't cook it on Yom Kippur, and they can't cook it on Shabbos. So the Mishnah says the Bavliim would eat it raw. So how can you eat it raw? Eating it raw, it's a problem, right? Less than Kazayas isn't an Achila. Eating it raw isn't an Achila. So he says, oh, it's not a problem, because that's the whole point. We care about Achilas Achefta, not Achilas Agavra, and therefore it was okay to eat the kachim even though they were raw. Okay. We talked about there's a problem with this because Achila Gasa seems to be a problem. We had a theory for that, but let's move it out of time because it's already very late. A couple more topics. We had Maisa Kamitsa, we had Lavona, and we had Pigel. Sorry, this is going so long. Maisa, we did a lot. We said at the beginning with the Chabura. But Only three more. So Maisa Kamitsa, how exactly was this done? So there's a couple of main points about this. The Gemara there assumed as just like an obvious point that chatzitza is a problem. So that's why that was the next psul in the Mishnah, that if you had a piece of salt or you had a piece of lavona or you had a little pebble, that would be a problem for your kamitsa. Remember, Rashi had two deos, whether it was just blocking your hands from the komates or whether it was cutting the komates in half. But Rashi said, the first day Rashi had was that it's a chatzitza to you. And he says, yeah, because it's a problem of chatzitza and kachim. Because the Gemara in Zvachim, which assumes that there's a problem of chatzitza and kachim, it's a little weird because the Gemara doesn't give you the mar makom. So this is, you put this on the list of cases where the Rishon will give you gzeras hakasav. Rashi, he gives you two. One Rashi has this lakach hakohen. I don't remember what the other one was, but Rashi has a couple different places. Oh, the kohen does something, it must mean that there's no chatzitza. So the basic question you would ask about this, when we tell there's a din of chatzitza and kachim, so right away you want to know, is this the same concept of chatzitza as the concept of chatzitza b'chol tara kul that we know and love? Or is it a unique halacha of chatzitza in kachim? We had a couple of potential nafkamina to this in the Rishonim. One was the question that Tosas asked in Yuma. It's kind of getting again. Daf Nunches. It's a good daf. Otosis are bothered over there. Gemara is talking about Mizrak Lesoch Mizrak. I carry one bowl and I carry another bowl inside of it, which is a problem apparently of chatzitza. So Bali Tosis say, wait a second. We learn Mesachas Sukkah. Lekicha al yedei davar acher shma lekicha. I can hold the Luv and Estrog that's being held by something else. So why are we so machmir here? So the Gemara, the Tosfos give two deos. The second view is the view of the Ritzbah, and the Ritzbah says, "Lekicha idi daracha shma lekicha." That's b'chol tara kula. We're dealing with kachim. You need atzmo shel kohen. I need that beautiful palm to be in direct contact mamish with the kli sharis. More of a chumrah, chatzitz and kachim, more of a chumrah than it is b'chol tara kula. It's a different din. And we had this come up also in the Rambam, where, what's the shear of chatzitza generally? So, we all got a wayus micha, so we know it's rubo umakbid. We were talking the other day, how on earth, you know, when is a case that you have rubo umakbid? When do you have a chatzitza midorais of that level? But the Rambam says, what's the shear of a chatzitza in kachim? Kol shehu. The tiniest smidge of a problem, of a blockage, that's going to be, what are we talking about in our sugya? We're talking about a little piece of salt, right? I'm talking a little piece of lavona, a little couscous ball. That's much. It's tiny, and yet it's a problem. So that sounds like chatzitz and kachim is more of a problem. Rabbi Yankov, the Sfas Emes, who actually has a different view, that kachim is that in general we say that kol shehu is a chatzitza, and specifically in tvila there's a kula for rubo umakbid. Those are two different views over there. Okay, the other main topic in Maisa Kamitsa, this is not complicated here, but just we should know about it, is that, again, we're like unlearning everything we learned when we first learned Vayikra. I really thought that the Kamitsa was done the three-finger scoop, right? But you look at the Gemara and you realize that it sounds like there are two different views in the Gemara, because Rava says you do Kamitsa kidakansiinshi. You know, most people when they're at home and they scoop out their flour, they do not use three fingers. They just scoop it out with their hand. And that actually seemed to be the view of the Rambam. You know, the Radvaz was in denial about it, but the Kesef Ishah said, yeah, the Rambam, Paskin's like Rav, I pass like Rav Papa, he thinks you just scoop the flour with your hand. He thinks that the Brisa the Gemara quoted was not a correct Brisa. We quoted the Yad David, who says, you know, the Mishnah later on says, how do you do Kamitza? Ketzer Osa? Toshet Svosa Val Pas Yado. You just spread out your fingers. Very important happens to be for learning the Rambam. Is to remember the Mishnayos are very important for the Rambam. So if you get like the Pshat in a Mishnah aligns with this, you know, surprising view of the Rambam, that's going to be a very important point. So the fact that the Mishnah sounds like you just spread out your hands and scoop it, so the Adavit says, hey, that's exactly the Shita of the Rambam. And we pointed out some of the Nafkamina to this, according to Rashi, that you have to use, you know, the three-finger move. So you remember the Gemara said that's like avoda kasha b'mikdash, because you have to do three fingers, and then your thumb and your pinky, you're like trying to get rid of the little extra flour and to make it perfectly even. That's very difficult. So the Rambam never quoted that. The Rambam never quoted avoda kasha b'mikdash for kamitza. The other times in Shas that we quote avoda kasha b'mikdash, the Rambam quotes it. The Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur with the Ketores, he quotes it. Malika, he quotes it. Kamitza, he doesn't quote it. Why? Because he doesn't think it's very difficult, because that view is rejected. All you do is scoop it up, and the mechika, the erasing, the wiping away, the extra flour, that is not part of the Maisa Avoda of Kamitza for the Rambam. So you can do it with your left hand, very easy. You could have another Kohen do it for you. And then if some, you know, weirdo Kohen decided he was going to do a machshava shelo lishma, but he wasn't going to do it during the time of Kamitza, he was going to wait and only do it while he was wiping away the extras. So for Rashi, that's a problem, because the wiping away is part of Kamitza. But for the Rambam, it's not a problem, because you did the Kamitza, and now I'm just brushing the stuff off. That's not a problem. So that was Maisa Avoda, Maisa Kamitza. Now we're just left with two more topics. Yeah.
Who said that even the Rambam is five fingers, the two of them are brushing off?
The Radvaz. Radvaz. Which, like, you know. Kesef Ishah didn't like it. Okay. So then on Yud Aleph, the Mishnah on Yud Aleph told us, we're finally on a new Mishnah, and the Mishnah said, if you are missing the Lavona, it's Pasul. Pshat in the Mishnah sounds like Lavona is the same as the regular Mincha. That if you're missing anything, it's Pasul. Then you get to the Gemara, and right away the Gemara introduces us to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, who disagreed. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon said, no, as long as you have a tiny bit, one ball of Lavona, two balls of Lavona, Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Shimon, but either way, they thought that as long as you had a little bit of Lavona, that was okay. So the question that jumps out of the Gemara is, what is the difference between the Lavona, which is missing, and Mincha, which is missing? Where if you're missing a Kol Shehu, it's possible. And so, you know, the broader way to ask this question is, what exactly is the relationship between the Lavona and the rest of the Mincha? And we had a bunch of different areas treating this question. What exactly is the Lavona's relationship to the rest of the Mincha? And it seemed complicated, right? And the Psukim sounded like Lavona was more of an external piece. On the other hand, the Torah uses this word Azkara for the burning, the most important part of it, and some of the Mefarshim thought that specifically referred to the Lavona. How you add the Lavona to the Mincha? So, this is a machlokas between the Braisa and Sota and Taras Kohanim. And Rashi al Ashas versus Rashi al Torah quoted both of them. The Gemara in Sota, which Rashi here quotes, says you specifically put the Lavona in the middle of the Klisharis, and then you brush it off to the side. Sounds like we're creating some sort of connection between Lavona and everything else. That's why it's very inconvenient, because now that the Lavona's in the middle, you have to brush it off to do Kamitza. Taras Kohanim, which Rashi quotes Ala Torah, says, no, why bother? Just from the get-go, when you put the Lavona in the Mincha, just strategically put it over on the side of the Klisharis, so this way it'll be very easy to go ahead and do the Kamitza. this view of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon that chaser is okay seem to be the clearest example of showing that they think that Lavona is fundamentally separate from the rest of the Mincha. When we talked about Reish Lakish and Ryochanan and Daf Tes, we said there's this Chafza Shal Mincha, and if it's missing anything, it's a problem. And then they had Machlokas. What if it's missing things? This stage, right before Kamitza, Nesina Bakli, after Kamitza, there's all the Machlokas about timing. But no question that the Chafza Shal Mincha is very important, and if you're missing any of it when you do Kamitza, it's dead. So why are we so makil for Lavona? Seems like they think that Lavona is just there to have the kiyum of Reach Nichoach. I don't really need Lavona for the Chafza Shal Lavona. I don't care about the object of Lavona in the same way I care about the object of Mincha. I care about Lavona because I want to have sweet-smelling frankincense. So as long as I have one or two balls of Lavona, that's going to be okay. Remember, Rav Chaim even thought that even if you had all the Lavona intact, you could just bring a little bit of it, and you've fully completed the ritzui for the carbon. Because all I need is a kiyum of haktaras Lavona. I don't need to burn the whole thing, even when I have it. Chazanish didn't like that, but that's what Rav Chaim thought. Okay. Right, and we had a couple of different nafkamina, but let's we'll take that for now. Just one that point out because it blends into the next sugya is the Mishnah on Daf Yud Gimel, which already right that's the second parak, and the second parak of Menachos is the world of Pigul. So the Tanoim argued in the Mishnah over there, if you did Kmitza al Menas to burn the Lavona, is it Pigul or not? So let's think for a second. Normally we think of Pigul as doing a Matir for doing a Achila. So here I did the Kemitza in order to burn the Lavona, and burning things is a form of Achila. So the Chachamim say that checks out. That's Pigul. Kemitza for Lavona, that's Avoda for burning, that's Pigul. Rabbi Yossi disagrees. Rabbi Yossi says there's no pigul. And he says, why isn't there pigul? It sounds like it should be. So in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi explained, well, he says, Lavona ina min ha-mincha. Right? Lavona is not part of the mincha. Sounds like Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim are arguing about the relationship between the Lavona and the rest of the mincha. The Chachamim think, look, it's one happy family. So, Kmitza onto Lavona, that's Pigul. And Rabbi Yossi says, no. Lavona is a separate entity. It's like a separate thing that has to be happening. You're not going to create Pigul from komates for the Lavona. Now, the Gemara made this a little bit more complicated, but kept the same basic idea. Because the Gemara said, really, the reason why Rabbi Yossi thinks that there's no Pigul here is a different rule. A rule of Ein Matir Mefagel es hamatir. Remember that you have to have a matir onto an achila. If the matir is something which is another matir, it's not going to be pigul. And the komates is matir. The komates is a matir, clearly. But burning the lavona is also a matir because now I'm allowed to eat the shirayim once I burn the lavona. So that's what Rabbi Yossi says, and the Chachamim say, yeah. That's true. Ein matir mefagel es hamatir, provided that they're totally separate entities. But here, you put these into one kli. So since I put these into one kli, I've united them, and therefore, there still will be pigul. So lemaskana of the sugya over there, you still have Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim arguing about the relationship between the Lavona and the rest of the Mincha. This nafkamina being, can I create pigul when I do the kmitza with intent to burn the lavona lamachar? So on that note, let's just tackle the last sugya, which was, you know, like one of the biggest sugyas in all of Seder Kachin, but we just took like a, you know, an initial overview of it, which was this question of pigul. And the one real question that we zeroed in on was how to think of this psul of pigul. Do we think of pigul as a problem in my avoda? If I did the shchita, with intent to eat the basar 3 days from now, that makes my shchita a problem? Or is the idea that I have ruined the carbon? It's a psul in the carbon that I now have created this chalos of pigul in the carbon. The carbon itself has been ruined, not necessarily the avoda itself, but the carbon. And we had a bunch of different nafkaminas to this. I'll give just like one easy one, and then a couple of the really important ones. Like the really easy nafkamina to this question is: can I be mitzaref half a zayas in shchita? I shech the carbon with intent to eat half a kezayas on the wrong day, and then 10 minutes later I do the zrika with intent to eat some of the half a zayas of the carbon on the wrong day. So the Gemara says that works. So we said, well, hold on a second. If the problem of pigul is in the avoda, so how does it make any sense to combine a chatzi zayas b'shas shchita and a chatzi zayas b'shas zrika? I didn't mess up my shchita because it's only half a zayas. I didn't mess up my zrika because it's only half a zayas. So the fact that these two can combine really seems to indicate that the psul is a psul in the carbon and not a psul in the avoda. The two really fundamental principles in pigul that seemed to relate to this question were, number one, which avodos trigger pigul? Do we focus on avoda, or do we focus on achila? So Rashi and the Rambam thought that the rule for pigul is it's a matir with the intent of eating lemachar. So that's focusing on the achila, which, after all, seems to be like the pshat and the psukim. But the Ravid disagreed. The Ravid said, no, pigul really, really is all about the avoda. And some avodos are more important than others. So, for example, if you shechted the carbon with intent to be makabel the blood on the wrong day. So, it's kind of impossible to do, which the Ravid pointed out. But assuming that still is tofes, says the Ravid, you'll have pigul. There's no achila. Doesn't matter, because pigul is about the avoda. So shechting almanas lekabel dam lemachar, that's a problem. And says the Ravid, the really, really important avodos are going to have a broader scope of pigul. So, you know, when you finish sprinkling the blood, so you have leftover dam. Leftover dam, it's called shvicha shiraim. You just pour the leftover blood onto the base of the mizbeach. That's not required, but it is a form of consumption, right? The mizbeach is consuming the rest of the dam. So is that going to be mefagel or not? The Ravid says it depends. The really important avodos, shchita and zrika, can create pigul even if your intent is to spill the shirayim, the machar. But the less important avodos, it has to be something more important, either for almanas to do an avoda or almanas to do an achila. But that whole worldview of the Ravid focusing on avoda, which avodos are more important, which avodos are less important, my machshava to do an avoda on the wrong day, really seemed to be focused on pigul as an avoda problem, not as a carbon problem. And the other general principle that goes into this area is this idea of hartza'as pigul. Gemara has this very, very, very interesting idea that, right, hartzas kasher ken hartzas pigul, that if you do anything wrong other than machshavas pigul, it's not pigul anymore. So that all seems to point to this idea that you're creating, let's say, machon call a carbon shell pigul. Yeah, it's not a problem in the avoda per se. I'm creating this very exotic, strange, problematic thing, which is a carbon shel pigul, which everything is brought kedas v'chadin except for the problem of pigul. It's because it's like a Jenga tower, and every stat has to be perfect. And if one thing falls out, you can't have pigul anymore. So,
a lot of great references.
Hey, you know what? It's like an hour and 40 minutes, so I got to try to throw a few things in. So one point where, like, or Schneer Cutler pointed this out was the Mitzorah. The Mitzorah brings his Asham. You know, if one of us does the Kinshir for Tazria, we can talk about this topic, really keep him awake on a Shabbos afternoon. So when the Mitzorah brings his Asham, so he also brings the Lug Shemen. Right? That's the oil which they then smear on the Kohen, puts it on his hand like he's Picasso, and then they put it on the ear and the thumb and the big toe. So the bringing of the Asham is the matir for the Shemen. And the rest of the Shemen is eaten, by the way. The leftover oil is going to be eaten by the Kohen. So you would think that you should have pigul here. You could have pigul here. If I shefted the Asham al manas to eat the Shemen on the wrong day, you'd think that's pigul. Because it's a matir for an achil on the wrong day. But the Rambam doesn't think so. The Rambam does not think that there's pigul in that case. Why not? So Shneur Kutler explains, because we're not interested in the avoda per se. We care about creating a carbon of pigul, and the shemen of the mitzora, even though it is matired by the asham, it's not part of the asham at all. In fact, you could, if you want, you could bring the shemen on a totally different day. You have to eat it on the day you bring it, but you could bring it on a totally different day. So he says, therefore, if we think of pigul as creating a carbon of pigul, then shemen of mitzora is a totally separate chefta from the Asher Mitzvah. It's a little bit analogous to the Machlokas Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim about Lavona, where Lavona was saying, look, Lavona is separate. So here, this is like, you know, that on steroids. And then the very, very last point to focus on, you know, because we really kind of shortchanged this in the sugya, but the end of Parak Beis is the Parak of the Machlokas of Pigel B'chatzi Matir. Yeah, Rabbi Meir and the Chacham argue, if I have half of a matir, so in Menachos, not only do I need to burn the komets to permit the mincha, but I also need to burn the lavona. So the Chachamim say you need a full matir for pigul. And Rabbi Meir disagrees. Rabbi Meir says even a chati matir, even just burning the komets with intent to eat the mincha on the wrong day is going to be pigul, even if I never had the wrong machshava for the lavona as well. Whole big sugi with lots of details. But one just key point, I think I ran quoted Rav Dani Wolf about this, but I'm not sure, is to suggest, let's think about this machlokas about pigul b'chati matir from our perspective, asking about pigul as a problem in the avoda versus as a problem in the carbon. If pigul is a problem in the avoda, so why should I care if I have the whole matir? Haktaras ha-komets is an avoda. If I did haktaras ha-komets shelo lishma, that would be a problem for the karban. So from the perspective of pigul as a flaw in the avoda, it makes a lot of sense to say that you have pigul b'chati matir, because even a chati matir is an avoda. But if I think that pigul is about creating this carbon, I'm creating a chafta shel pigul, so then that's exactly the counter of the chacham. The chacham say, you need to do, how do you make pigul? Doing the matir to do the achila at the wrong time. And that means not just doing anything that has a shem avoda, it means doing the whole matir. That's how you're going to impose, that's how you're going to force this carbon to become something you never wanted to be, and that is you're making it into pigul. So this question of pigul in the avoda versus pigul in the carbon, so we saw it, the machlokas rishonim, the scope of the avodos, the Ravid versus Rashi and the Rambam. We saw it for the Rambam's idea about the Lug Shemen Shemetzora. That's a totally different thing, so that's totally out. And that already could be the core machlokas tanan, Rebbe Meir and the Chachamim. Rebbe Meir thinks that pigul is a psul in the avoda, and therefore chatzi matir, you're good to go, it's a problem. And the Chachamim say, no, you need the full matir, otherwise you haven't created this chaf sashal pigul. Shkach, everybody.
All done?
I think it's it.
Okay.